Okay, I'm giving today's shiur from Shul. We had a haskara, so I haven't made it home yet, but we just as well from here. Okay. So we're doing Shmuel Bet Perakei today. And there are two topics in this presentation for Perakei. One is the reaction to David becoming king over all of Israel. He was crowned first in secret by Shmuel and Shmuel Aleph. Then he was crowned in the beginning of Shmuel Bet by Yehuda, only Yehuda, while the rest of Israel served Ishbosheth, Shaul's son. And now in chapter 5, all of Klal Yisrael point David as the unequivocal king of all of the nation. Now, that did not take place right after Ishbosheth died. This takes place 5 years. It took them 5 years to do this. Okay. So when there's another interesting point is that the city that ended up being the holy city, the place that we feel was already chosen from the time of Avraham Avinu is Yerushalayim was one of the last cities conquered, right? It's only becomes part of Israel now in Shmuel Beis Perakei. So we'll have to figure out what that's all about also. And we'll get into that shortly. Let's start with the beginning of the paraphrase. So we discussed some of this last week that they said, you know, we realized all along, even back when Shaul was king, that you were the Motzi and the Mevi. That's the Lashon that we see even in the Torah in Parshas Pinchas, where Moshe begs God that after he dies, God doesn't leave them without a leader to be Motzi and Mevi. Right? You have to bring them in and take them out. That's amazing. Meaning that you have to bring them into the family of nations, make sure that we're secure from other nations, and that we have good trade policies, and that we're just part of the family of man in the world, and we can be an Or LaGoyim, as Yeshayahu says. Anyway, that's what the Bnei Israel said that they realized David was all along. You could forgive David for being a little upset now. So why did it take you this long to say that? Why didn't anybody stand up for me in back in Shmuel Aleph? Remember, that's just the herd mentality. Right? The king wants to kill David. You know, who's going to stand up for David? It's not a popular thing to do, and it's not a safe thing to do. Look what happens to the people who stood up for him, right? Okay, so Vayomer Hashem, Pasuk Gimel says, Vayomer Hashem l'cha, atot yireh es ami es Yisrael, v'atot yireh l'nagid al Yisrael. They recognize that God has chosen him. They see that they can read the events of the past years, and they see that this is destined. Okay, now, so the Pasuk says, we're told three times already that all this is happening in Hebron. Hebron is in the heart of Yehuda. And then all of a sudden, shortly, David is going to make an attempt to bring the center of the kingdom to be not in Hebron, in the south of Yehuda, but in Yerushalayim, which really isn't even in Yehuda at all. It's like a border, but just off of Binyamin. Okay, according to the halacha, Yerushalayim doesn't belong to any of the tribes. It belongs to all of the tribes. But just as much as, let's say, the United Nations is in New York City, even though it's supposed to be like its own place, the Beis HaMikdash does straddle between Yehuda and Binyamin geographically. So David is king now in Hebron, and it says he was king, he was ruled in Hebron for 7 years, and he ruled in Yerushalayim for 33 years and 6 months. Okay, now starting with Pasuk Vav, we'll see some activity of David regarding the Yevusi. Yevusi is one of the seven Canaanite nations, and they somehow maintained a presence in the center of Israel all this time. It says in Sefer Yehoshua that Binyamin and Yehuda were unable, they're incapable of displacing the Yevusi from Yerushalayim. Okay? Yerushalayim remained a Gentile city. Now, there are some scholars that claim that there are two Yerushalayims in Tanakh. There's an upper Yerushalayim and a lower Yerushalayim. The evidence from Tanakh might corroborate this. For instance, it says in Shmuel Aleph that after David killed Goliath, he cut off his head and carried his head and his sword to Yerushalayim and deposited them there. Right? Took them Dafka to Yerushalayim. Okay, and then it's at the end of Sefer Shoftim, there's that terrible story with Pelegesh Begiva, where at first they say, let's go to Yerushalayim and find lodgings there. And then one of the people in the party say, no, we can't go to Yerushalayim. No Jews live there. Right? So there are various opinions in one direction or another. But what's interesting is that it says that David took the sword to Yerushalayim, but when he received food from the Kohen Gadol in Nov, it says that the sword was in Nov. So Radak says that the name of Yerushalayim can be interchangeable with any place where the Aron stands. Shiloh, if it's Nov, whatever it may be. It's an interesting shita. But let's get back to our text. The Yevusi control Yerushalayim, and this is what they say. Okay. Vayomer l'David lemor, lo tavo hena, you can't come here to Yerushalayim. Kim hesircha ha'ivrim v'hapischim lemor lo yavo David hena. David has no chance in the conquest of the Yevusi until those blind and lame people are removed. Yeah, that seems to be the simple pshat. Blind Ivrim are usually blind people. Pischim are usually lame people. Let's continue. Ve'alko David es pitzuda Sion hi'ir David. David conquered the stronghold of Tzion. Tzion means an extraordinary place. To be a Zionist is to feel that Jerusalem is an extraordinary place, right? There is a commentary to the Nevi'im and Ksuvim called Mitsudas. Now, it's a mistake to say Mitsudas Tzion, even though that's what the words are here. It's Mitsudas Tzion, the pun, Mitsudas Tzion, where he describes where the author David Altshuler defines terminologies and words. Mitsudas David, another commentary alongside it, describes concepts and discusses questions and answers. Okay, so David conquered this Mitsudas Tzion, Hi'ir David, and he called it the city of David. Ve'yomer David ve'yomahu, komakei Yevusi v'yegah b'tzinor v'esapischim v'esaivrim sinu'ei nefesh David, al kein yomru iveru piseach lo yavo el habayis. I must tell you this pasuk has baffled the commentaries, and it's almost incomprehensible if we don't apply to it its parallel pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, which we'll do shortly. Okay. David says, whoever can grab hold of the tzinor, tzinor is a water faucet or water, something that supplies water. Right? And then he says, and those blind and lame and blind people that David's soul hates, therefore, don't ever bring me a blind or lame person to come to my house. Right? Vayesha David b'mitzuda vayekro lo ir David vayiven David saviv min amelo v'mbabaisa vayelach David haloch v'godel v'ashem elokei yitzvako simo. So David built up this city and called it the city of David. He put around it a milo. Most commentaries say a milo is a moat. He built a moat around the palace. In that moat, usually they used to put like alligators and stuff like that. And the only way to get across that water was through a bridge that was suspended or let down from the palace. It was protected. Other Mephoroshim say it's something else, but this is what most Mephoroshim say. Now let's get back to those blind and lame people. What are they? What is it? What's going on? So a little background. According to Chazal, Abraham forged a pact with two people, two groups, the Yavusi and the Plishti. The Plishtim pact that's described in the laning of this of the first day of Rosh Hashanah, in Perek Chof Aleph Sefer Bereishis. Avram forges a pact with the Plishtim, as a peace treaty that one would not encroach upon the other. Meshbam says that God was angry with this peace treaty. How can you do this? The Plishtim are part of the land of Israel. According to Rishbam, the Akedah, which is the story right afterwards, was a punishment for this. The Elohim Nisah is Avram. God put him to the test and punished him. How dare you give up the land of Israel that many of your descendants are going to die defending? Okay, give up one of your own children. See how easy it is to do that if it's so easy for you to give up land in Israel. Look it up. It's all in the Rishbam. Rishbam goes on a journey of drash, which is very uncharacteristic in his commentary to the Akedah. But that is the Plishti pact. Our story is related more to a pact that is not so well attested to in the text, but it very well attested to in rabbinic literature, that Avram made a pact with the Yavusi also, a peace pact regarding the lands of some of the lands in Yehuda and Shomron, and some of the lands right there in Yerushalayim. So that the two hotspots, Yehuda and Shomron, or what they call the West Bank, and Gaza, because Gaza is the land of the Plishtim. So Avraham wanted so badly to make peace, but it has ramifications. Okay, so the Yavusi told David, the only way you could come into this place is if you get rid of the, and the word Ivrim and Pischim was inserted by the author of Sefer Shmuel instead of the gods who the Yavusi felt was protecting their city. Okay. The author of Shmuel is being derogatory. The gods of the Yavusi can't see and they can't walk. They're blind and they're lame. And David hates them. He hates the fact that they thought that the city seems to be so impenetrable and it's their gods that's protecting them. Right? They're about to come up to a rude awakening regarding their gods, but that's what this means, this section means, that this perish is brought down by the Ralbag. Okay. According to Abarbanel, the king of the Yavusi was speaking with arrogance. This city is mine. Even our blind and lame people could protect it from your best soldiers. That's how well fortified we are. And David hated the blind and lame because of this boastfulness. Okay, that is according to Abarbanel. Okay, so according to some other commentaries, the king was saying that our city of Yerushalayim is a holy city, and we don't allow any bale mum, anyone with a physical blemish, to enter our city. If you want to come in, he's telling David to get rid of the blind and lame. But that wouldn't explain why David would hate the blind and the lame. Okay. All right. So this same commentary seems to be saying that the king of the Yavusi is saying that your people, David, are blind and lame when it comes to finding our water supply. Now, if you go on some tours of the tunnels, the Chizkiyahu tunnels, the David tunnels, the Nachal Kidron, if you go on some of the tours, they'll tell you, I'm not sure how exactly accurate it is, but they'll tell you where this water supply originated, not from Hezekiah, from many hundreds of years before then, and what had to be done by Yoav in Divrei Hayamim in order to cut off that water supply. That's what's added in Divrei Hayamim. Okay, here it just says whoever touches the faucet. What does that mean? But in Divrei Hayamim, it's made quite clear that this has to be understood as some kind of test of water. And that has always been the key to conquering Yerushalayim throughout history. Is the one who controls the water. Anyone who's ever tried to do Tashlich in Yerushalayim on Rosh Hashanah knows that there's a very, very poor water supply. Okay. From the south, east, and west, it's practically impenetrable. The north, however, meets high ground. That's why Yirmiyahu says, Mitzafon tipatach ha-ra'ah. All the conquests of Yerushalayim always come in from the north. Right? Okay. But we'd like to offer, based on some archaeological data that might fit even a little better than this with the with these blind and lame. This is not unique to the Yebusim. The Moabites fought this way also, where at the outset of a battle, they would take all the blind and lame and crippled people, like in insane wheelchairs, and put them in the front lines. It's the same cynical fighting as Hamas and Hezbollah to use what we call human shields. They know that the New York Times and every wonderful magazine and newspaper in the world is going to speak about disproportionate numbers, and they put pictures of all the children that are the responsibility of those who make them human shields when Israel just shoots back at where the fire is coming from. But so they could, because the Yavusi can always rely on the news outlets that will say, that will always be willing to say, listem atem shekabashtem es artzem shel zayin amamim. They'll always say that. So Yavusi started the battle with the blind and the lame in the front lines. David knew what was at stake. At first, he couldn't fathom shooting arrows at blind and lame and crippled people. But then he realized that they're all advancing behind them. And if I just don't do anything, it's going to cost a lot of death on my side. Right? The New York Times say not enough Israelis die from those Scud missiles and those random attacks from all over the place. Right? Not enough Israelis are dying. So too many Palestinians are dying. So David says, listen, I have to fight back. I can't let them fight the battle and make draw the terms according to the way they want, using this despicable act of hiding behind the blind and the lame. Right? And that's why David hated seeing them. Right? It conjured these terrible memories where no matter how much David realized that's what he had to do, right? He regretted doing it. He felt bad about doing it, about fighting blind and lame people. But the blame is placed squarely on the nation that put them there. No less than the blame is on Hezbollah and Hamas for putting their human shields in harm's way. Okay. I'm wondering if this might explain David's harsh treatment of Mephibosheth, who was crippled later in the Sefer. When we get up to it, I'll remind you of this. Okay? All right, Pasuk Yud says, Ve'elech David haloch v'gadol v'Hashem elokei tzvako simo. David went higher and higher, and the Lord was with him. Now David has Yerushalayim and a water supply, very crucial to maintaining control of the city. All right, so the only thing left is that the Aron is not in Yerushalayim. In fact, the Mishkan is in total disarray right now. Okay, the holy city is about to become Yerushalayim, but the Aron is in the house of a man named Avinadav. very eerily like the two sons of Aaron. And the Mishkan, the Mizbeach, and the Menorah, and the Lechem Aponim, that is in a place called Givon. Okay, look at all these different cities. Hebron is the seat of the Malchus until now. Now it's turning to Yerushalayim. The Aron is in a man's house, Avinadav. And the rest of the Mishkan is in Givon, where it would stay until Shlomo builds the Beis Hamikdash. Okay. All right. So now that David is the unequivocal king of all of Israel, some very smart man to the north realizes that David is probably going to want to build himself a palace. And he may also want to build a temple to his God. I can help. And that would bring in 40,000 jobs to my economy. Okay. Vayishlach Hiram melech Tzor malochim el David. Hiram, the king of Tzor, did not stall. He did not wait for David to contact him. He sent down to David, Batzei Arazim v'charashei Eitz v'charashei Evin, here v'yivnu bayis to David. Okay. It's pretty neat. He went down to show him what the kind of work he can do, knowing full well that if David has to build a temple to his God, that'll be 100 times the size of what I just did. Okay. And in the ancient world, everybody knew that people of Tzor, which is today Tyre, Y-R-E in Lebanon, that the people of Tzor were the world's finest craftsmen for wood, and they had the world's finest wood. Okay. Harzei Halavanon, Atzei Arazim, see all of Tanakh referred to this way. Okay, so David recognized and he knew that God was on his side and God was working with him. It's all sort of a harbinger and a precursor for David realizing it's time for me to build God a house. Okay, just one last interruption to discuss a few things. This now is foreshadowing. Okay. He had a son that he named after the prophet, Nasan. Shlomo. Which Shlomo is this? Is this the Shlomo we know born to Bathsheba later? Because he's not even married to Bathsheba yet. Did David have another son, Shlomo? Both those opinions do appear, especially when this parallel passages, these names, appear in Divrei Hayamim. Some of these names are mentioned twice. Okay. Radak in Divrei Hayamim says that David had a number of children and they died. A number of them died. So when they died, David had other children and named after those children who died. That's why they're mentioned twice, two different people. Okay. Okay, so now this is a fascinating thing that's happening as we close out Perikei. When David became king, the Yevusi, right, reacted with, according to some of these Mefarshim, with arrogance. The people of Tzor to the north reacted with generosity and kindred spirit. It's interesting is that in Sefer Melachim, the king of Tzor, Hiram, going to get along very well with Shlomo. And yet in Sefer Amos, and especially Chezkel, the people of Tzor turned drastically against Bnei Israel later on in history. Just pointing that out. Okay, so the people of Tzor reacted in one way to David becoming king, a way that served his purposes. But look at the reaction of the Plishtim. Plishtim, remember that David is the one that they used to dance about and say, David, Shaul kills in the thousands, David kills in the 10,000s. Remember that? Vayishmu Plishtim ki mashchus David lemelech haYisrael. Vayalu kol Plishtim levakeshes David. Vayishma David vayered al hamitzudah. When the Plishtim heard that David had been crowned king, they all went out. Now, vakeshes David here does not mean to seek his peace. It means to seek his life. And David heard this and went down to the stronghold. This is exactly Emek Rephaim that we know today. Okay? Can I describe it, if I may? You're coming from the Inbal Hotel down Independence Park. Can everybody picture this? Right? As you go down, keep going down, there's some gas stations there. You can make a left turn and go down a steep, steep hill. People make a lot of weddings there. Right? I've been Masai Kedushin there numerous times. You go down a steep hill and you come around, and then you can go up to the right, and you're gonna go, you can't go up that way with a car because they're coming down. You go up to the right. I'm not sure if you can go up that, but I think you can't go up that way. You can walk. Go up to the right, and you're going to get to the, you're going to snake up to the, where the buses go. It's called the Shar HaShvot. If you go up to the left, you're going back up to the hill to Shar Yafo. Can everyone picture this? Am I, you all with me? Okay. So now trace all the way back up all those hills, and that's called Emek Rephaim. Right? It's called that today, and topographically, it really fits what we're about to read. Okay, this is where the Plishtim gathered to fight David. It's a very strategic area, and it's very hard to conquer if someone's holding the high ground. Okay, just that David has something that the Plishtim can't match, as you're about to see. So Vayishal David Bashem Lemor Ha'alel Plishtim Hatitnem Biyadi. Remember Hashem of David Alei Kinaton Etainet Plishtim Biyadecha. Is that David has a good oracle? Is he asking God whether it's through the Kohen Gadol Evyatar using the Ephod, or whether David is asking directly of God? Can leave that up to different parshanut. Because in other places it says that David told Evyatar, here, bring me the ephod, let's inquire of God. He does not say that here. David was a Navi himself. David can go straight to God like Moshe does. And God seems to answer immediately. So Hashem says, yes, go. I have given the Plishtim to you in your hands. Yemer Hashem of David, Aleiki Naton Etein Plishtim Yedecha, V'yavo David Beval Paratzim, V'yakem Shem David, V'yemer Paratz Hashem Et Oivai, It's interesting. Keep an eye on that name, because in the next parak, David is going to name a place also Peretz Uza, not Peretz Zion. Peretz Uza. We'll see why he's calling it that. No, Peretz Zion. Peretz Vav. The very next parak. Vayezvu shemes atzabeim vayisoim David banoshav. The Plishtim were in such a hurry to get out of there after David totally destroyed them, that they left all of their gods behind. They were too heavy to take with them. They just fled for their lives. Vayisoeim David v'anashav. Vayisoeim means they lit them a fire. They burnt them. Okay. David planted no benefit from their avodah zarah. So he burnt everything. Okay. So vayosifu ol plishtim lalos. Vayinot shubei mikrofayim. The Plishtim went up again. Even though they got a pitch, they got a smack, they came back. David Hashem said, don't go up the hill I just described. You know, when you get to the bottom there are about 150 steps you can go up. And you know, remember what's at the top of those steps? The windmill, right? The famous windmill. Everyone takes pictures there. Can everybody imagine this, right? You have all those steps up to the windmill at Yamin Moshe. Okay? And then when you get to the top, you go a little past the windmill and you look down, you're going to see the Inbal Hotel, or I think, yeah, that's what it's called now, the Inbal. It used to be called the Larome. King Solomon is there, and you turn to the right, you'll get to the King David Hotel. If you go straight ahead, you'll go into the center of town. Right? Yeah, there's like roads that go in four or five different directions there. Does this sound familiar to everybody? Right? Jenny, you know this, right? Okay, this is, if you go all the way the other way, up Rehov Jabotinsky, then you're going to come near where you are. All the way up to, you make a left to Rehov HaPalmach. Okay, just giving a little topography from Shmuel Bey's Perikei. So the Plishtim went state to hold their ground, and David asked, should I come up that snake hill? And Hashem says, no, I'm giving you insider information. Come from behind them, which means that he wants them to go all the way around. Can you picture where that is? That's like where, you know, there's a theater back there, and there's some, they do some shows and plays, and Rehov Gretz and the Pinsker building. What else is up there? Rehov Pinsker, Rehov, you see the show called Chovei Yisrael, I think it's called. Chovei Jabotinsky, you know, the president's, residence. Okay, that's where Hashem told David to come all the way from around the back and surround the Plishtim from the other side. Okay, I hope I've done a good job at, with some of the topography of Yerushalayim to tell you where this is all happening. Okay. All right, now in Emek Rephaim, they just put up this beautiful, it looks like the High Line. Beautiful, like a walkway where the train station used to be. Now, there used to be a train station there, and now they've made it into like the High Line. It's really an incredibly beautiful walk. Right, they put like restaurants around there, and they closed it off the traffic. And it's really quite nice. That gets you all the way up to like Derech Beit Lechem and Derech Hebron up there, right? Okay, I hope this is ringing some bells there. And if not, we all better get back to Yerushalayim, so we can remember what these places look like. Okay, there are a few bits of Musar here. Is that David, by coming back to surprise the Plishtim in the background, says, Vayachas Plishtim Yigevad Boach HaGezer, you don't hear from the Plishtim anymore. Right, this powerful nation that were just a mortal threat to Bnei Yisrael throughout Sefer Shoftim, throughout Shmuel Aleph. Now, when David becomes king, two different nations react exactly differently. Sor says, listen, this is a new king. He's going to need a palace. He's going to need a temple. Let me build his palace, and now he'll call upon me to build my temple, to build his temple. Poor Tzor, David was rebuffed, but they stood in for David's son. Hiram helped Shlomo build the temple with all these barges bringing down wood from the Mediterranean, down from Lebanon all the way to the port of Yafo to bring to Yerushalayim. So it served. It was a good investment on the part of Hiram. But you see, David becomes king, and Hiram's reaction is so antithetical to Plishtim. Plishtim make the mistake of reacting to David becoming king by fighting him. Why not react like Hiram Melech Tzor? Try to make peace. Because that's the way the Plishtim act, right? I would compare this to something in the Torah. I mean, you have 12 Meraglim all seeing the same thing. So what made 2 speak this way and 10 speak that way? It's perspective, right? All 12 could have said the same thing, say exactly the same words. It just switched them, right? Start like this. The people there are giants. They're incredibly tall and powerful. It seems to be a land that swallows its inhabitants. It looks like it's impossible to conquer such a place. But Ephes, that means nothing in the face of the fact that we have Hashem. Say it that way. Look at the beautiful fruits we brought back. Right? It's just a matter of perspective. Say all the things you said. Just say we don't have to worry about these things. I'm just telling you what we would have to worry about if we didn't have God on our side. But we have God on our side. Okay? So that's the perspective. Now, I have one other example in the Torah. This is an example very much like Shmuel Bey's Berakeh. Is that when Bnei Yisrael in the desert, immediately upon leaving Egypt, demonstrated some miracles, right? There's a Kriyas Yamsuf. Never mind what people have heard from far and wide about the miracles in Egypt. And you have right after Bishalach, at the end of Bishalach, actually, it says, V'yavo Amalek. Amalek saw whatever Yisro saw. Yisro and Amalek lived together. We know that because in Shmuel Aleph, when Hashem told Shaul to fulfill the mitzvah of Timchet Zecher Amalek, he warned the descendants of Yisro to move away from that place because they lived together all those years. So when Amalek reacts at the end of Sefer Parshas Bishalach and kills innocent women and children in the back lines and goes after our weakest ones, right? Just then, that's right after that, is by Yishma Yisro, because they were together, seeing everything the same way. So Yisro and Amalek see exactly the same thing, and it's a matter of perspective that makes Yisro say, you know, Baruch Hashem Asher Yitzil Eschem Yad Mitzrayim Miyad Paro, and Amalek feel that they can cool down the boiling waters, as it were, in that parable that Rashi tells. He knows how devastating it's going to be to himself to fight against this powerful God. But, you know, he knows how to cool us off. And he does. Shekor chabaderech. Okay. So that's what I present to you as the mussar of these two nations, taking exactly like polar opposite reactions to David becoming king. Okay. So that will close off Parakeh, but I want to comment on one thing. How is it that Yerushalayim went unconquered all this time? And moreover, if it was known as like a holy city from ancient times, why did they wait this long to conquer it? All right, but that answer I think I gave earlier is that there was a peace pact that Avraham forged with them, and they kept to it. See, the Plishtim violated that in the time of Shimshon and before. But the Yavusi was holding strong to their commitment. In fact, you'll see at the very end of Shmuel Bet, the king of the Yavusi, named Aravna, seems to be very kindly disposed towards David. He wants to support David. Okay. Now, is Yerushalayim mentioned in the Torah? The answer is not by that name. Avraham names the mountain, where it says the highest mountain, at Eretz HaMoriah, and God does tell Shlomo to build the temple on Har HaMoriah. So the mountain in Eretz HaMoriah that Avraham could see from a distance would logically be that place where he said, Bahar Hashem Yera'eh, God will appear to my descendants, not just me, at this mountain. Avraham is not satisfied being a Navi for himself. He wants his descendants to be Navim too. And he wants there to be Nevi'im among his descendants. That being said, according to Rashi, according to the Medrash, the city Sholem, it says Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem. Underscores the disappointment of Yeshayahu at the prospect that Yerushalayim has become an Ir Damim, a city of blood. Become a den of iniquity. And the king of Yerushalayim in the Torah is called Malki Tzedek. The king of Yerushalayim in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim is called Adoni Tzedek. Ramban in his Perush HaTorah uses those two points to draw the conclusion that Yerushalayim had a reputation of being a city of justice, even in antiquity. Okay. So Yeshayahu, in chapter 1 of his book, Haftarah of Shabbos Chazon, describes the very sad state that Yerushalayim had devolved into, while chapter 2 speaks of the potential for Yerushalayim. Like, men shall not with sword against men, nation shall not serve against nation, shall learn war no more, whatever it's on the Isaiah wall. Okay. But to call the city its full name, Yerushalayim, does not appear in the Torah. God refers to the place as Hamakom Asher Yivchar, the place that I shall choose. So if you wanted to ask, so why does God keep calling it that? Why not just say, go to Yerushalayim? So the answer to that is that if God had mentioned what city his holy place would be in perpetuity, the people would have fought over it. And the other nations of the world would have been like lahachis to conquer it. As it stands, the place is just called Hamakoma Sheikha, the place that God will choose. But God doesn't seem to be choosing this place. David does. And later on in Shmuel Bet, you'll see that God tells him to choose to purchase the place that the Beis HaMikdash will be built, Har HaBayis. We'll get to that later. Okay. Now, Yerushalayim did have a reputation, according to Chazal, as like this primordial place from where the whole world was created. Misham nimtecha ha'aretz. The whole earth was created there, like in grids, longitude and latitude. It certainly seems to have Kedusha already from the time of Akedas Yitzchak. Why did God tell him to go dafka to that mountain? Okay. Muslims also have a tradition that this place is where the world was created from. Okay. Although that tradition seems to come quite late. Yerushalayim is not mentioned at all in the Quran. It's considered to be, according to some scholars, the distant mosque that's mentioned at the very end of the Quran. There was an ancient story of two brothers who lived side by side, and one had a large family, one lived all alone, and they both had thousands of sheep. And one day, the brother who lived alone said, "My poor brother has so many mouths to feed. I am worried about him. I have so much wealth, and I have no one to worry about. I'm going to bring over one sheep every night to his flocks." Well, notice, if I bring 200, but one every night, maybe he won't notice. And at the same time, the other brother said, "My poor brother, he lives all alone. Who's going to look after him in his old age? I have all these kids to look after me. I'm worried about my brother. I'm going to bring him one sheep every night." And they both did this for years and years on end. Years. And you would think, each one said, that I'd see some flocks missing. But no, you never saw anything missing. Because every day that this one would bring to him, the other one was bringing to him. Right? So year after year after year, there was no change. Until one night they saw each other and they realized what they were doing. And where they fell and hugged at that place, cried tears of joy and brotherhood. And where the tear, one of them hit the ground, that's where Hashem said, "That's where I want my Kodesh Kodashim to be. That's where I want the Beis HaMikdash to be." Now, Yerushalayim is also the center of Israel, much more than Hebron is. But more important, says the Malbim, is that Yerushalayim straddles right between Yehuda and Binyamin, as opposed to Hebron, which is in the heart of Yehuda. So you get it? This is a beautiful parish of the Malbim. He says that this was David's way of reaching out to Binyamin, who may feel a little bit at the short end of the stick because You know, we were kings. We had the first dynasty. Now these guys just take over just like that. But David didn't want to alienate people of Binyamin. After all, he took back Michal. They didn't have their falling out yet. That's in the next chapter. He took back Michal to help, as we said before, to unite the kingdom, right? And now he feels that let me it's not just throwing a bone to Binyamin. No, it's real. It's genuine. To put the base of Mikdosh and to put the seat of his throne right there in the border between Yehud and Binyamin is a way of making a partnership. And this partnership did indeed last. Because, you know, that's why we refer to the 10 lost tribes, right? The 10 lost tribes besides Yehud and Binyamin. Especially someone from Binyamin is called the Yehudi, right? Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan ha'ira, Ushmo Mordechai ben Yerib and Ish Yemini. Ish Yemini means if you say Binyamin. So all of these are reasons for David to bring up his kingdom to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is surrounded by mountains, but then again, so is Hebron. In fact, Hebron is higher in altitude than Yerushalayim is. Yerushalayim is very high up. If you ever come in from the Vaseret Zion, you're coming from Tel Aviv, on Highway 1 especially, you'll see just how incredibly high Yerushalayim gets. And yet, Hebron gets higher. That's why the Mishnah in Tamid and the Mishnah in Maseches Yuma has the people in the Beis Hamikdash calling out, "Do you see the rays of light from Hebron?" Yeah, because Hebron is higher. But Hebron does have, the topography really is very hilly, even more than Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is hilly in its surrounding areas, Harim Savivlo. Okay, this is our treatment of Perakei. The Musar is, keep the perspective always in a positive place. Look what happened to the Plishtim for being negative when David became king. And the people of Tzor added tens of thousands of jobs for their ranks, which was wonderful for their economy. Okay, next week is going to be Perek Vav, a beautiful, great Perek. It's a Haftorah, or part of a Haftorah, of Parsha Shmini. I have to just leave a slightly early today because I'm in Shul and we have Marv at 9 o'clock. So everybody have a wonderful week. And I look forward to seeing you, Amir Tz Hashem, next Monday with Perek Vav.